Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. You are listening to the actual telemetry signal from Sputnik 1 launched October 4th, 1957. 60 years ago, before most people living today were born, but not our Not Old Better audience, we will remember that beep, 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 beep of Sputnik, the Soviet Union's first artificial satellite. And this sound was heard around the world. It was the sound of wonder and foreboding. Nothing would ever be quite the same again in geopolitics, in science and technology, in everyday life and capacity of the human species. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living and newest Inside Science programming series, we're joined today via Skype with Kelly Beatty. Kelly Beatty is the award-winning senior editor for Sky and Telescope magazine, who explores the events leading up to Sputnik's launch exactly 60 years ago today, the political fallout that led to America's response of Explorer 1, the formation of NASA, and the crucial but largely forgotten role that everyday citizens played in tracking these first satellites.
When Sputnik 1 was launched on October 4th, 1957, the worldwide reaction was a mix of awe and apprehension. American scientists knew the launch was coming because the Soviets had told them. But to the American public, it was a dramatic wake-up call.
That, of course, was our guest today, Kelly Beatty, who I'll welcome to the Not Old Better Show immediately. Kelly Beatty, welcome to the program.
Hey, my pleasure, Paul.
You're speaking on October 4th, 2017, as part of the Smithsonian Associates Inside Science program. Today's interview is actually on the 3rd, but October 4th is a significant day for your talk for other reasons. What are those?
Well, October 4th, tomorrow, marks the 60th anniversary of the launch of Sputnik 1, the Earth's first artificial satellite. When that happened, we were in the midst of the Cold War, deeply in the Cold War, and tensions were running high between the United States and the Soviet Union. The background was this all took place during something called the International Geophysical Year, a sort of worldwide gathering of scientists from 60 different countries to try to study the Earth and everything we can find out about it. And both the U.S. and the Soviet Union had announced that as part of that, each country would launch a scientific satellite. So that was setting the stage. We, of course, in the United States figured we'd be first because we were so technologically superior and very little was actually known about what was going on over there in the Soviet Union. But boy, was it a shock, ever a shock, that on that night, October 4th, 1957, that cables reached the West that the Soviets had, in fact, launched the first satellite.
Well, let's jump forward to today. Are we still in a space race, or is there more collegiality and collaboration and kind of a joint responsibility for what's going on up in space?
Yeah, the latter is a good way to point out how far we have become, because it's almost an economic necessity for big projects like the International Space Station is a very good case in point to be undertaken by more than one country. No one spacefarer, NASA or the no one spacefaring country, be it the U.S. or Russia or China, can afford to spend $100 billion to build a base on the moon or a space station. And so these collaborations have become almost essential for the furthering of our exploration of the space beyond the Earth.
There were a whole series of events that led up to the launch of Sputnik, making it even more traumatic for the American public. What were some of those?
Well, we have to go back in time and remember, at that time in the 1950s, mid-1950s, both the U.S. and the Soviet Union had nuclear weapons. But intercontinental ballistic missiles, the means to deliver them, throw them at each other across oceans, didn't exist yet. Both countries were in the process of building those rockets. In the United States, for example, we had the Atlas rocket under construction. That was going to be an ICBM. Vernon von Braun and his team in Alabama were building a medium range ballistic missile called the Redstone. And so with this power, with the rocket power to launch and throw an atomic warhead that far, also came the promise of, with just a little more effort, a little less weight in the payload, and a little bit more rocket thrust, you could put something in orbit. That prospect was looming large at this period of time. So it was kind of a dual race. You know, it was a race to get into orbit, but behind the scenes, it was a race to build rockets for warfare.
This is a big year with the eclipse and now with this anniversary of Sputnik. You're a busy guy. Is space, the sky, telescopes, all of that getting their just deserved attention right now?
Oh, great question, Paul. You know, I think that the eclipse, the solar eclipse that took place in August, really introduced a lot of people to just the notion of looking up into the sky, the daytime sky, the nighttime sky, be what it may, in ways that they hadn't figured on before. They had been just sort of something taken for granted. And now I do think that there's renewed interest, maybe it'll only be fleeting, of you know, being interested in what's going on in space. Unfortunately, these last few months, our attention has been diverted by all kinds of things going on Earth. Some of them, you know, natural hurricanes, and some of them man-made, like mass shootings, unfortunately. And so it's possible that the eclipse's glow, so to speak, has already worn off. But I think that we really do need to reconnect with space exploration in general, and also in just the curiosity of the sky and universe above us that comes with that. It's really only by having that curiosity that we'll have the will, the wherewithal, and the budget, right, to make those leaps into outer space that will truly expand our knowledge.
Your program, the Sputnik Years, is part of the Smithsonian Associates Inside Science program. Certainly, if these other events have kind of overshadowed some of what's going on above us, science literacy is very important, maybe now more than ever. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that science literacy is just so critical to our understanding and to our future these days?
The late Carl Sagan, as one of his final books, wrote something called A Demon Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark. And in there, he describes in great detail about how science illiteracy and how complacency and how just taking for granted what you hear as truth leads us down a path to ruin. When I've taught astronomy, I've told my students, you know, be critical of the facts. If I tell you something, ask me why it is that way and force me to explain it and become your own critical thinker. And I think that's what we're lacking in our society today. Not enough people are thinking things through on their own. They're accepting as truth what they hear or want to hear, and don't step back and try to be objective. And science is all about being objective. And we see this reflected in the debate on, you know, climate change, for example. So many people today still believe that there's equivocal evidence as to whether or not we are affecting climate change, when, you know, the vast majority of scientific observation has proven that that is definitely the case. And yet people still refuse to take an acceptance of that.
Well, Kelly Beatty, we are thrilled to have you and thrilled to be hearing from you on October 4th at the Smithsonian Associates. Kelly, you're also senior editor of Sky and Telescope magazine. I think you've been doing that for 40 years. Tell us a little bit about Sky and Telescope magazine and what you do there now.
Sure. So Sky and Telescope has been around for 75 years, since long before Sputnik 1. And we have always been the sort of go-to magazine for amateur astronomy. And you'd be surprised how many professional astronomers read us as well. We're sort of a compilation of everything going on in the sky with, you know, space missions and professional observatories and amateur clubs. It's kind of a little bit of a catch-all. My specific role is I specialize in the space program and in planetary science, that is the our solar system. And as you mentioned, I've been doing it for 43 years, and it's still a rush every day when I walk in. I just never quite know what I'm going to be doing, but it's always going to be fun, always going to be interesting.
I had a chance to go to the website, Sky and Telescope Magazine, and I really encourage our listeners to do so as well. It's a great resource. Kelly's got a lot of really interesting things there, including some information about Sputnik and all that's going on around space and its future. So, Kelly Beatty, grateful for your being here and certainly grateful for all you're doing.
Thank you very much, Paul. Clear skies to you.
Thanks, Kelly. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much to our guest today, Kelly Beatty, senior editor of Sky and Telescope Magazine, who'll be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program October 4th, 2017. Special thanks to Smithsonian Associates and their Inside Science program, along with all their help with the interviews. As usual, we'll post links to everything. And also as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable. I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me today. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave it at iTunes, Google Play, or send it directly to me at info@notoldbetter.com. Stay tuned for our next show, another great one, as we talk about better, the Not Old Better Show. Thanks to all.